Here we are, the first week of December, and it's Columbus with Mayor Jim Winup. Thank you very much for having us.
Well, you're welcome. It's starting to look a lot like Christmas.
isn't it?
Yeah, we've got our tree out front in City Hall. It's a 30-footer, and it shows really nicely. You know, the way the City Hall sets up with the window panes behind it, you get a nice reflection of the lights that are on the tree and really puts you in the holiday spirit.
Nice. And you just had a parade, too.
We did a holiday parade on Saturday,
yeah. And that went really well, too.
Yeah, each year, first Saturday in December, we have what we call our Festival of Lights Parade. And this year we had one, 100 entries in the parade. It took about an hour, or a little bit over an hour, for the parade to pass. All kinds of lights, three of the high school bands from nearby, followed by fireworks. It was a beautiful evening. And, you know, the parade route's maybe 14 blocks. Probably for 10 of those, the people were three deep. So we were real pleased with the turnout.
Yeah, nice. Today is Tuesday. The show airs Wednesday morning, but there's a city council meeting tonight.
Yes, there is.
Anything big on the agenda?
We've got a couple items on there. I mean, probably the most important item is the city utilities budget for 2018. The budget is pretty flat year over year, and so we don't have any kind of scheduled increase or change, really. We couldn't up or down for utility rates, and so that'd be either water or wastewater rates. But the utilities director has sort of given us a 12-month warning that he anticipates an increase next year. So we'll wait and see what that is. In the meantime, we've got a couple of initiatives identified to, you know, sort of look into some of the water issues we had earlier this year. You know, I never really felt like we had placed anybody at risk, but nonetheless, there's some things that we do want to investigate, and so those are taken care of in the budget for next year.
Yeah, just really quickly, any update on those two city wells that were shut down, what, about a month ago?
Right.
There were some contamination issues.
Right. Well, there was a question about a chemical called dioxane, and that affected two of the wells. Those have been taken out of service, and we are in the process of hiring some consultants who we think have some expertise, you know, in that particular issue, because it's not a very common issue to have to treat. Dioxane itself is a fairly common chemical, but in the extent or the, I can't think of the word I want to use, but in the amount that we have to treat is a little bit of a problem. So we want to talk to some people who have some experience in that area, and that's going to take us a while to find those folks. But that'll all be looked into here in the next 3 to 4 months.
Okay. Also, Tuesday night, the city is looking to, is it formally approved the $10 million for the railway overpass?
Yeah, our first installment to the Indiana Department of Transportation is due December 15th, and that amount is $10.5 million. That received a preliminary approval at the last city council meeting, so we would be looking for final approval tonight. And, you know, I don't expect any issues, so we'll look forward to making that payment on December 15th.
When I was reading up a little bit, I saw that the city will be installing accessible curbs all over the city, and I think residents should know it's not just Columbus. I've been seeing these all over in Bloomington as well. So is this some sort of grant program that's happening?
Typically, it relates back to the use of federal dollars for some project. And, you know, much of our money for asphalt overlay comes from Indiana. Much of Indiana's money comes from the federal government. And one of the strings that comes with that money is that you have to bring the curb ramps up to current code or to current standards. And the problem with that is that the federal government changes their standards from time to time. So a city street that might have been overlaid, say, 10 years ago with a curb ramp might find today that that curb ramp doesn't meet the new specifications, and so it has to be redone as well. I think in particular, you know, in talking to the city engineer, part of the issue we've got is with the treads, or what serves as the warning or the grip, you know, as you begin to descend. And, you know, the rules on those have changed, and so, you know, that's really what spawns a lot of these curb ramp replacements.
And I think you have some road updates too for us, don't you?
Well, the Rocky Ford Road project is complete, and that road is open. We've got, you know, the Maple Street project completed some time ago. We've got a few other paving projects that are underway, but for the most part, everything's done for this year. The State Street project continues on for a little while. We've got, right now they're installing some street lights on both sides of State Street, on the other side or the east side of the State Street Bridge. We still expect that to be done by Christmas, although, you know, time's a wasting kind of thing, and so hopefully we'll still be able to get that finished by Christmas.
You know, much like we talk about in Kokomo, Columbus is taking advantage of the blight elimination program here as well.
Right. Board of Works this morning approved three more houses to add to the number that we've torn down. And I don't remember, I'm trying to, and the tally to date is somewhere between 10 and 15, you know, that we've been able to remove. And so we feel pretty good about that, because these are homes that in many cases are condemned. They're not fit for human habitation, but nonetheless, people do find their way in there. And so it's not safe for them, it's not safe for the neighbors, and it certainly isn't healthy for anyone. So we want to get these things cleaned up, and that's what that program helps us do.
We talked about a new ordinance that went into effect about cars that are inoperable mm-hmm. in the city limits, and how, well, they become an eyesore and kind of don't really contribute to...
Well, it's many of the same issues. You know, in many cases, it's not safe. I mean, critters find a way to get in there, and and sometimes sometimes they're two-legged critters, you know. But, yeah. These are an issue for us, and we need to get them cleaned up. So the City Council probably 3 months ago, yeah. passed an inoperable vehicle ordinance. And among the provisions are a carrot and a stick. I mean, the carrot is that if you don't want your inoperable vehicle, well, the city will pay to tow it to a salvage yard. And at that point, the car has a value. I mean, the salvage company will pay sometimes as much as $200 for the inoperable vehicle. And we will give the $200 to the vehicle owner. And we will pay the tow fee ourselves. You know, that's typically going to be between $50 and $75, depending upon where the vehicle is and how much trouble they have getting it out. And so there's really a no-lose for the vehicle owner. They get to turn what they have into cash. We pay for the towing. And I want to say so far we've probably been able to clean up about 15 vehicles. But as I also mentioned, there's a stick attached to this. And that is that if you choose not to participate in what we think is a pretty generous program, well, now you can be fined. And some of those fines can be, you know, up around $1,000. And clearly, you know, this is a vehicle, in most cases, it's worth nowhere near that. And so that has encouraged some folks to move their vehicles. You know, funny how this works. But so we've been able to clean up, not only by just towing, but by through the new fine, you know, the new penalty option that's been given to our code enforcement officer.
Exhibit Columbus is through, yeah. But from what we've heard, we had a report last week with reporters come down and yeah. and cover it. A huge success would be an understatement.
Oh, just remarkable. You know, we've got a number of different ways to sort of provide some measure. You know, you can talk to some of the merchants, particularly the visitor center, and, you know, track the number of tours they give and the in-store merchandise that they sell. But by any stretch, it was a multiple of two or three times what we had seen prior years. And we have visitor estimates as high as 50,000, you know, who came to town. Several of the exhibits were extremely well received. One in particular, the conversation plinth, which is where we met, you know, a couple months
yeah.
ago. Every time I drove by that, whether it was during the day or in the evening, there were people on it. I mean, it was an incredibly popular attraction. And so, you know, everything comes to an end. And so this year's Exhibit Columbus is ending. And some of those exhibits are being taken down. Some of them will simply have to be, you know, moved on to the landfill or someplace because they really weren't built for any long-term use or with any long-term use in mind. But we've had some people express interest in trying to save other exhibits, and so we'll see, you know, how all that plays out. Some of them will be a little easier to move than others, but we've had a few people contact us and wonder if the exhibit can't be moved to their location, wherever that happens to be. So yeah, it's exciting.
And it will keep going. There'll be a symposium next year, and then maybe perhaps another Exhibit Columbus in 2 years.
That's the current plan.
Yeah.
You know, and again, it's all dependent a little bit upon all the appropriate funding and people's interests. But there certainly seemed to be sufficient interest and momentum from this activity that you'd think it would carry over for another 2 years.
I want to touch briefly upon a couple things that actually made USA Today with Columbus.
Uh-oh.
This was about about a month ago or so. Vice President Mike Pence trips
yeah.
to Columbus, costing the city overtime about $70,000 in additional budget that needed to be approved. I assume that got approved.
Yeah. 70 is a little bit of a misnomer. I think we could have done a better job of trying to explain the math. It's really about half that. We had several incidents last year that drove overtime for our police and fire. There was a police officer shooting, you know, that occurred. We had a drowning in the Flat Rock River that took a fair amount of time over a weekend to sort out. And the fire department had several large apartment fires, you know, on the east side of town. And those all factor into this. But anytime you mention the vice president's name, you know, that's the headline. And so, yeah, he sort of got tagged with a good portion of that. We really think the number's closer to half, maybe 35,000. And as I've told a number of people, we're happy to help. I mean, we're not complaining. You know, it's an honor for us to have a vice president from our community. And if we can help his service to our country in some way, you know, we're happy to do that.
Well, and this is something that, you know, many cities, of course, don't have to deal with. So it's also kind of, from another perspective, very interesting to find out how much the city is involved when the vice president, or perhaps even the president, were to come visit.
Right, right. You know, the Secret Service is a very capable organization, and what they'll do is they'll outline some requests that that they put to you in terms of being able to provide readiness or backup. And, you know, we're willing to respond when we're inside city limits, you know, inside our jurisdiction. So, and as I said, glad to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, there's another interesting article, too, picked up by USA Today recently about Columbus being a destination for young professionals.
Uh-huh.
And we talk about this in many other cities, too, and the millennials and what they're looking for and what they want. How does Columbus fit into that picture?
Well, you know, Columbus has a pretty high concentration of engineering talent. And a good portion of those engineers are millennials. I mean, they're recent college graduates who've come here to work for Cummins or many of the other manufacturing companies that have research and experimentation facilities here. So it's pretty common that we attract young, particularly professional types. What we try to do is offer them something to do when they get here. You know, Columbus is a great community, but at times it can be small. And so, you know, sometimes the choices are limited. And that's part of what drives our interest in the riverfront, is being able to provide some kind of outdoor recreational activity that just simply doesn't exist today. So it's an opportunity, and it's a bit of a challenge, you know, to be able to address that. But I think if we can sort this out, which, you know, I feel good about, I think we can. If we can sort this out, then I think it positions us very well for continued growth.
So you bring up a topic on my list too, the riverfront development.
Right.
Moving forward, I saw some renderings of early proposals of what could be done
uh-huh.
here in Columbus. But I always like what you say, you're step 12 of 82, right?
Right.
It's still early
yeah, we got
in the
a ways
process.
To go yet. Yeah, we have some really neat concepts. You know, we've asked the design firm that we've worked with, Hitchcock, to give us some ideas about not only what's possible, but what might we want to do. And part of what we've learned is that, you know, our original plan, which was to snake a trail, you know, in between what we call the pump house and the river, you know, that can be done. And it can be done relatively reasonably priced, a couple million bucks. And unfortunately, though, we've learned that anytime you get down into the water or the waterway, you go through a rather significant permitting process. You know, we had been hoped that we would simply be allowed to build the trail and have that be able to stop, you know, at that point. But what we've learned is that no, to get the permit that we need to build the trail, we will also need to address what we call stream bank armament, which is to protect the banks on either side of the river with either some very large blocks or, you know, some kind of apparatus that they may determine later. At the same time, the Department of Natural Resources Corps of Engineers will expect us to remove the dam. And the dam by itself is not that big a component of the price. But if we want to put anything back in to the river in lieu of the dam, we'll have to do it at that time. We can't come back 5 years later or 10 years later and then add, you know, some other feature, because once the dam is gone and it stays that way for a while, then that becomes the new normal. And they really don't want you to change the normal, and normal in terms of the river flow. In terms of stream bank armament, I mean, those people who are familiar with Columbus and familiar with Columbus Regional Hospital, if you can envision what's on Haw Creek there around the 18th Street Bridge, that's a little bit of what's in mind here, some really large blocks of stone that are just going to sit there and, as I said, protect the sides. Because we're getting some erosion on both sides of the river. It's not the kind of thing that is going to cause an imminent collapse of any sort. But that's where it's headed. And, you know, we've got an opportunity here to sort of get in and deal with this when it's still an opportunity. If the dam were to fail, I mean, if a portion of it were to break off, I'm not sure that we could get the permit to put it back, you know, and there would be no federal or state agency that would come down here to repair the dam. They would simply say that's Mother Nature reclaiming, you know, her property, so to speak. And so, you know, if we want to do anything in there, we're going to have to move and probably do it all at once. And unfortunately, as I said earlier, I mean, that raises the price considerably. You know, what had been a $2 million project now morphs into $8.5 million or thereabouts. And that presents a significant problem for us because we simply don't have that kind of money, you know, in our budget. You know, we had anticipated, you know, trying to get some help from local philanthropists. We'd anticipated trying to pursue grants for dam removal and stream bank enhancement, that kind of stuff. But the difference that I just mentioned, it's pretty significant. So this is going to take us a while, you know, to bring all that together. So it may be another, 6 to 9 to 12 months before we have anything significant to report on this project.
Does that, you said about $8 million, does that include not only the erosion type control, but also the recreational use and
some of it? Until you get a little further in, you really don't know. I mean, at this point, we're dealing with estimates that have been put together by a designer. And we think those estimates are pretty well informed. But until you get a contractor who's going to go build it, you really don't know. And there are a couple steps in between where we are and there. I mean, there'll be some engineering work that has to be done that will give us a little bit more insight into the cost. And hopefully, at this level, we've been conservative and those cost numbers will come down. But they're not going to be cut in half. You know, and they're not going to be cut down by 25%. You will be doing well to shave $1 million off this. So we realize that we've got a significant funding issue there, and until we can see with some clarity how we're going to get that funded, we're probably not going to be bringing this back for a lot of public discussion.
So you have a firm that's helping, I don't know what you call it, look into it and...
Yeah, give us the concepts.
Yeah.
They're
doing all the research and...
Right, right. You know, the whole notion, for example, there was a question as to at what level, what height you should build your trail. And what they settled upon was 608 feet, you know, 608 feet above sea level. And the notion is that is the average height in Millrace Park. So we will have constructed a trail system that either the whole thing floods or the whole thing's dry. You know, so you'll be able to use it all, or you won't be, it won't be where you can use parts and can't use parts. I mean, it's all going to be down. In 2016, the water in White River got above 608 on 15 days. And so far this year, I think it's about 20 or 22 days. And you got to remember, some of those days, well, it was raining. You know? And some of those days were in January or March, where you probably wouldn't have been out a lot. So it's not a real impediment to build this at 608 feet. I think it keeps the cost down, and it makes the whole trail consistent throughout. You know, some of the earlier designs that we saw, even going back, say, to 2014, had trail heights that were considerably higher than that, maybe 625 or thereabouts, and we just don't see a need to incur the cost to get that high. So. Again, you know, the design firm is sort of helping us with those kinds of decisions, you know, being able to design a trail that's consistent with what we already have and that can be built for a moderate cost.
So just in terms of right now, what's the next step?
Well, the next step, I mean, there will probably be a meeting in January where we hear from Hitchcock again, and you know, they will ask the City Council and the Redevelopment Commission if they've got any questions, essentially. And then after that, I don't know that we will have a next step on paper. You know, what we'll do is continue to talk to people in the community about their willingness or likeliness to fund this or to help us fund it. Because again, as I said, it's a pretty steep price tag, and there may be some other projects that are more popular with those folks. And you know, we'll have to sort of see how this compares to them. So. That's why I say it may be a few months after January before you hear of this again.
Because there's a big portion of this that it's about, like you were saying, it's quality of life. It's also recreation. It's economic development.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I mean, if you take a look at the riverfront we got right now, I mean, it's just there. I mean, it really is difficult to engage it. There's something about flowing water that is attractive, but there's something about that dam that is not. And we know we've got some erosion issues, and we know we got deterioration of the dam issues, so we might as well just go ahead and address these if we can, and get that piece behind us, and do so in time that it allows us to make a difference with respect to the millennial population that we're trying to attract to our community, as well as, you know, the people who live here and would enjoy the amenities. So that's part of the reason we do want to move forward, but at the same time, we've got to be somewhat cognizant of the cost and figure out a way to address that.
Yeah. So this is our last show of the year, December 2017. any last-minute things on your desk that you're hoping to kind of wrap up this year?
Well, 2017 has been a great year. I mean, when we look back, when the city of Columbus looks back, 2017 will have been, you know, a marvelous year for us. You know, we think about the Master's in Architecture program that Indiana University has announced. The movie Columbus premiered this year. Exhibit Columbus was an artistic and cultural success beyond all expectations. So there's a part of us that wants to take a little bit of a breath and just move on to 2018. One of the things we've talked about in these shows from time to time is our heroin response initiative. And so, you know, we keep that issue moving forward. I mean, the last event to have occurred and along this line was the county's increased local income tax. And, you know, we've got to get what we consider to be accurate estimates from the Department of Local Government Finance as to just what that means in terms of actual dollars. And then we've got to sit down with our friends at the county and sort of partner with them in terms of how we fashion a response and then how we fund it. We will have a variety of issues with respect to prevention, treatment, prevention and education. You know, those can sort of go forward on one track. The treatment and recovery part is a little bit more problematic. And so how we procure some real estate, because that will be involved, and how we site that, we need to sort of think through. You know, this is going to be a shared activity with the county and with Columbus Regional Health. So, you know, you just get into those questions about who owns what, you know, and if we hire employees, who do they work for? And those are issues that we need to sort through. But we have an example in our community that we'll probably at least pay attention to or will follow in some respects, and that is the Emergency Notification Center, the 911 Center. You know, right now that's an activity that is shared between the city and the county. The city pays 55% and the county pays the balance, 45%. And so you've got a building, you got an activity, equipment in there, and employees who are performing a service. And so I envision that something like that or similar to that will come forward. Now, whether it'll be county owned and operated, as the 911 center is, or it'll be city owned and operated, you know, where we just reverse the roles, or whether we create a new organization to sort of manage this for us, you know, that's all to be determined. But it gives us a little bit of a model to follow, and that's sort of what we have to work through here, the balance of this year and into early next year. So that's really where we'll be spending most of our time.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.